This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to part two with my conversation with Kevin Daly from Value Add. Now that the official conversation is over and the lights are off and the camera's off, even though they're still on for both of us, the sun is still rising for Kevin. If you're watching the video, you can see it in the background. But I enjoy this. I call it the after show because it's just more topics. Sometimes it's things I don't want to break up the first part with, or anybody who knows me knows that I have a list of questions and things I want to talk about, and it's literally not possible in a 30-minute show. And so we'll use this for. If you didn't catch part one, make sure to check that out. Again, this is Kevin Daly from Value Add. We talked about his program, what he developed it for, how it helps get people in sales in the right mode or in front of the people they have historically done well with, not to enable them or just make them lazy, but to really serve them and the customer and then evolve over time. But let's get into this. Kevin, welcome to the after show. Welcome to part two.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
All right. So one of the things that you mentioned, this was right towards the end, and I love what you said. We were talking about quality versus quantity. You know, I asked you about that, about what sales, what has changed in sales that you've seen over your experience in sales. And I love how you put it, where it was about consumers just have less patience. They want to, they want what they want. And I think it's also just because everyone's getting barraged by everything all over the place and it's nonstop. So, you know, you've got to be mindful and empathetic of that from sales. Where does that fit in with the numbers game? Here's what I want to know that you're seeing, because it's still a numbers game, right? You still have to make phone calls, but it's also quality versus quantity, but you still need some quantity. Any idea with that, or anything that, you know, is good guidance?
Yeah, I think it's still as important as ever it was to be able to pick the customers that you're going to be having those conversations with in the first place. If people are impatient, you need to have a conversation with them really early on that is engaged with something that they're interested in. So even before you're going to get it to the sales, even if you have the perfect salesperson speaking to the customer, if you didn't have a really good reason for having that conversation, don't have it. So I think that still comes through in terms of the numbers. From what we see, the number of calls going out is reducing, not going up. Yes, the number of dials might go up because the number of pickups are lower, but the actual number of conversation. But if you get this right and you're picking the customers, you've got to be a bit more picky around those customers that you're going to be having those conversations with. Those conversations can be longer. You know, once you do get there, if there is this connection that you're able to make between the two people and individuals, then from a numbers perspective, you know, the pressure of you know, get through multiple numbers in a day, if you're going to focus on quality, it isn't quite there. It's not quite as high as it was, because you want to have more meaningful conversation to get the customer across the line. I mean, that'd be ridiculous and making these conversations too long, of course. I mean, you don't want to go overboard.
Yeah, and I think that's, there's always that interesting intersection with the vanity metrics, like the number of dials and things like that are on the surface, versus what are we actually getting from it? What makes sense? And again, this is why I do this, why I think these conversations are so fun, because in thinking about what you're saying, where you should be calling the right people, right? Either they have raised their hand and said, please call me, or you know it's a business that could use your help, right? Versus just pure, like, I'm just going to grab the phone book and just dial every single person until I find someone. Those days are over. But if you know that that person could use it, needs it, has raised their hand, they've shown interest, then it's no longer a numbers game, because you would want to call all of them. But you're filtering it so that it's the right people that you're dialing, not just everybody.
Anybody, yes. Yes, and if your sales guys feel that they have almost a responsibility, because what they're offering is something very real and meaningful to a customer, then the tone is a little different. You know, they're prepared to feel a bit of because they also understand how the customer, as you say, they also are consumers. They also understand that. And therefore, if they feel they have information that they need to share, and they can be a little bit more persuasive if they feel it's in the customer's best interest to do that. And if we're just selecting nonsense data and throwing it at them and saying, just die, you lose the sales guy as well. Because he's also along the guy going, you know, I'm having these conversations and I'm trying to get this client to convince him to do something that's of no value to him. And you speak, you know, obviously your message about being authentic. You're not being authentic. You actually need to be. And if that sales guy feels like this is meaningful for that client, well, that's an important factor.
Yeah, and I think that really goes, again, to the quality versus quantity. It's not about, all right, you need to make 200 dials today. You need to have good conversations with the right people and dial as many as it takes to have that, but not just speed through things, like make the most out of each of those. I see this a lot, too, where there's a mix of inbound and outbound and salespeople just kind of cherry picking or waiting for the easy opportunities, right? Like not even pushing that hard for the person who needs or wants it, right? Just looking for the ones where people are just easily wanting to sign up because they're playing a numbers game. Oh, I'll just dial more and find the person who's just ready to go, which of course is dangerous. And what you said, which resonates so much, I love this. Like I wrote this down, is consumers don't have patience for that. I talk about that all the time. Consumers don't want to play your game of numbers game or whatever it is that you're trying to do. They want to play their game and they want you to serve them, which is why I love the approach that you have, which is, all right, how do I serve them at the game they want to play with the right person who has the best chance of resonating with them and actually helping them?
Yeah, you asked me a question earlier around what else has changed, and I spoke about patience. But I think also that with the advent of much greater technology and our ability to automate a lot and build through a lot of technology, there's a risk that comes with that. And that is that we almost starting to treat the salesperson as a robot themselves, that they are somehow this cog in this mechanism that does things, and, you know, sort of Six Sigma approach, all cogs should look the same and should do the same thing. And that's not how we build relationships with people. It's the differences that make the difference in those relationships. And how do we play to that person? It's not, because otherwise, if they are robotic and it is a robotic response, and let's say that path is true, have you really built a relationship with that customer? Why don't you just robocall every single person? And because there's no relationship there. Right? Yeah. But when you have a meaningful conversation, there is a relationship there, and we should be playing to that strength. And it's that very human thing that we're bringing to the table of, let's have great conversations with customers. And if we can find that match that gives us that head start, and not treat our sales guys as, sit down, you're gonna make 2,000 calls in this month or what it is, and it doesn't matter who you speak to. No, it matters.
Yeah. I have my thoughts on it, but I really want to know, without saying anything from my side, when we're talking about what you said, where there's now technology, there's automation, and companies are leveraging more and more, which is smart to a certain extent, why do you think companies might feel like, or why do you see them, or maybe they verbalize it, why they're leaning so much on automation and now seeing salespeople as a roadblock or a barrier to scaling that they want to scale? Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think cost is definitely a factor. I think you have to be able to see, let's get as efficient as we can, and I'm for that, right? I'm not anti the idea of being efficient. You know, I think we should be as efficient as what we can, but I think sometimes I feel when I chat to management, they haven't come almost from the guy on the ground. They haven't had that experience. A lot of them, you know, where 20 years ago when you spoke to some of the leadership, the guy came from the floor. He understands the conversations that I've had. So sometimes You actually need people that have had that experience on the ground to be able to speak to those clients, and without them thinking, oh, it's just a process. You know, this is how the process got to flow. You got these people having conversations, and they're kind of all the same. And you know, you actually sometimes need someone who's been through that experience. And I think that's something that has changed.
All right. So I just made a note because what you said was really interesting, and I have my thoughts on why companies over automate. So for anyone tuning into this, make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check for YouTube, because I'm going to make a solo episode. I don't want to take our time because this is all about you, but I have some soapboxes I'm going to get on regarding automation and companies doing that, especially cost and other things. So I love this. This has sparked so many things. Now, let's shift a little bit. So you have your company. You're in Australia. I believe you're one of your salespeople I talked to initially is in South Africa, and you guys are in different regions. Why the U.S. and what are you seeing as like the value of your service in the U.S. right from a go-to-market strategy, and then also the challenges?
Yeah, so the U.S. has got the scale that often we need that's lacking in other parts of the world. So the US has also got accessibility to data to a large degree. The structures and processes that are put in place are robust. You know, the information that is there, the investment in those systems, in CRM platforms and capabilities means you know your client far better than in some of the regions that we've dealt with. So in some of the parts of the world, they're actually big, particularly in those parts where currency is a huge challenge, to put a large CRM platform in place, just not possible simply because of the cost of doing it. But that also means they don't have the benefit of that CRM, that they may not know enough about that client. Where the conversations in the US have been much more, you've got a starting point. You've got the data. There's already that head start. We don't have to speak about, you know, where's the data coming from. Everybody knows where the data is coming from. That conversation has already happened. So scale is a very large part of why the US. And I also think the time's right, you know, to look at something a little different. You know, to look at, you know, the challenges that we're all having coming about. I spoke earlier about Regulation F and collections, and that's a challenge. And you know, how do we meet that challenge? That does mean timing for us is probably good now, you know, as people are working through how that works. So yeah, the US has got the scale we're after.
And it makes total sense. Like, obviously, data privacy is important. Other regions of the world, it's so locked down that you don't have the access. And you're right, the infrastructure, right? Like, I deal with companies and call centers in other countries, and somebody in, like, the Philippines or India, because of the scale, because of the currency, because of the revenue being generated, because of the price point they have, to think of a CRM, something like Salesforce or even something cheaper, it's like, no way, that's all of our margins. And so that's not there. I think that's fascinating. Now, one of the things, whenever I talk to someone in sales, especially someone who created something, right, founded and developed something, is I'm always curious about why somebody wouldn't want to sign up, right? Obviously, there's all the reasons why they would. That's pretty clear. If anyone's not sure on why that is, they can check out your website, right? They can go to bestpair.co. But why would somebody not do it? Which, of course, is the bane of every salesperson's existence, which is why, like, you should do this, but why aren't you? What are some of the reasons that you hear when somebody says, yeah, it sounds interesting, but no?
Yeah, when you have a new innovative technology, right, you always are, like, fascinated by why, like, particularly with our pricing model. I mean, you can go crazy. Like, our pricing model, we're participating in the success, right? We don't ask for much to get started, right? And why wouldn't you say yes? And I think sometimes because it's a little innovative and a little different, you know, you do need someone with a somewhat of an innovative mindset. You know, I appreciate that. You know, when you're seeing everybody using stuff, then the herd kind of follows. I think that's a factor. I think there's also fear around protection of that data. I think they assume that we're going to take on who this client is, and we don't. You know, we don't, for example, know who the client actually is. We just really know a reference number. So it bypasses some of those. But then you always get the guy who goes, "Oh, yep, we can do that. We will build that." You know, and through the I must admit, in the 20 years since we've been doing this, there have been a few that have given that a go. None of them are still running. Yeah, because there's complexity here that you only worked out by actually banging your head and kind of doing things and figuring out that, oh my goodness, that created, I didn't expect that as an outcome. I didn't expect the unforeseen sort of consequences of doing things sometimes in this world. So sometimes it's like, I really want to do this ourselves. We want that IP to be internalized at times. But, you know, we're investing this the whole time. You know, this doesn't change. You know, you're forever and a day looking for how do you do it better? How do you do it better? So it's, you know, sometimes that's super frustrating when clients want to go that path, and, you know, that's okay. But geez, we can do this in weeks. It takes a long time to get this right.
Yeah, I mean, you have two options as a business leader or owner: build it or buy it. And I see that for anyone who's done any kind of B2B type sales, you know that all, like, you will come across those people who think, "Oh, I'll just make this myself. It doesn't sound that hard." And what they don't realize is how hard it is. And are they willing to invest the time, the resources, and the money to do it? Could they do it? Of course they could do it, right? Like, nothing is so magical that somebody else couldn't do it. But are they going to? And do they have the right mix? Do they have the patience? Can they play the long game, right? Versus buying and going, "All right, let's leverage what you've been learning," and doing it on that, which is, it's always fascinating. And I always recommend, I was like, "Hey, if you want to build this, give it a shot. How long until I should call you back before you think you probably aren't doing it?" So, and I think whenever you're setting the pace, the first one to do something or a new offering no one's ever heard of, that education timeline, getting people to realize it, finding the people who are the ones to more likely take on innovation and risk, right? The ones who want to stand in line for the latest cell phone or technology, even before it's been proven, because they just want to have it, sometimes to say they have it. That's who you're looking for in the beginning.
I'm also like one of the things that we, on our site, you'll see claims of quite high conversion rate numbers that, in other words, how much difference does it really make by getting the lead to a salesperson? You asked about numbers earlier. What is the actual difference from random to that allocation? And if you have some scale with a couple of interesting data points, that number can be really big, like 50%. In other words, it could be 50% improvement from random to getting to the right person. And at the time, you know, we've got one of our case studies shows a 77% improvement. And one of our advisors was going, "You actually need to bring that number down. People won't believe you." And it's like, but it's true. Like, I feel like I'm lying if I don't put it there. But if I bring, you know, it makes that much difference, given the right circumstances, right? I'm not saying in every case, but if you get the right ingredients in place, it's amazing how much better results you get if you have great conversations.
I feel like, especially because it's a process technology that people haven't heard of or aren't familiar, hasn't been proven like on a scale that they've heard of, it's almost like you want to have it on your site for a lower percentage with an asterisk and small print and say, "Actually, the number is 77%. But if we put that on there, people think it's too good to be true. So we put 50, but just know it's much higher. And that you should be able to get good results." It's like you almost want to do the opposite, which is not standard results, but like undersell it and then see if people read the small print and call it like it is.
Yeah, no, I get that. Maybe that's exactly what we should be doing.
That would be fun. All right, one last question here in this part. Sure. Otherwise, I know that we could keep going. And at some point, you got to start your day there in Australia. Is where do you see the future, short-term, long-term, not forecasting like business, economy, all that stuff, just sales operations, what consumers want, you know, the rest of this year, 2023, based on the trends, where do you see things going? What should you or your client companies be mindful of planning for?
I still think we're hearing a lot of we still hear a lot of noise around what is the role of the salesperson and what is that conversation going forward. And I think, you know, forever I've heard about the death of the sales guy and what role does he play, and consumers will buy products without you. I think that noise is going to continue, but I think the end customer still wants a relationship, and those relationships are important. They're valuable, and we should not be thinking that anytime soon that there isn't a role for a meaningful conversation where a salesperson is helping a client make a decision, move through a sales cycle with the intent of helping that client. As long as the intent is in play and it's not something other than that, I think we need to stick to that part. We need to stay to what's right and help that client and make that difference. And there are just some things you're not going to automate.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. As much as companies think they want to automate, as much as they think consumers don't want to talk to anybody more, there are still things people need help with buying, certain verticals, certain groups of people, and it's not even just a demographic. It's not a baby boomer still want to talk on the phone. It's anybody who has something where they have to figure it out. They want to know they can talk to someone, and then they actually want that person to actually help them like a professional. And I think that's so important. It goes back to your quality versus quantity. It goes back to your relationships. You know, that it's really, that's the point of the salesperson. And again, not the numbers game, but relationships and value and helping people move forward. So I'm so glad that you said that. I couldn't agree more.
Cool.
So that's it for part two. Thank you for this. Again, we're 22 minutes in. I know that we could keep rolling. There's a lot of stuff. Again, for people tuning into this, if you didn't catch part one, please go watch or listen part one on podcasts, on YouTube, wherever you find it. But if you want, in the show notes, but here it is. So best things, if you want to find out more about what Kevin is doing with his company or just chat with Kevin, bestpair.co is the company website. Go there, look at the testimonials, look at the numbers on there, keeping in mind they are real, so don't freak out if it seems too good to be true, because literally there's so many ways to help your team be successful. Like, I know it from my side just doing it manually. I can only imagine with technology. And then you can also chat with Kevin. Find him on LinkedIn, Kevin Daly, D-A-L-Y. He is /K-H-D-A-L-Y. Again, Kevin, thanks for being on here. Thanks for this after show part and even more gems that make in my mind spin and things that I think are important for companies. So I appreciate you being here and waking up early to jump on the recording with me.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Jason. Been good. Been great.
And for everyone watching and listening, again, make sure to check out part one. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to get all of these episodes. Until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.